Dennis, don't eat your monkey, please.
Dennis is sitting here eating his little monkey.
Another fabulous, incredible episode of A Kick-Ass Love Story. I'm your host, Paige Van Zandt. My co-host, Austin Vanderford. Dennis Vanderford, who's eating his monkey's crotch right now.
Yeah.
But he looks really cute.
He does. He's really cute little boy.
We have a great episode planned for today.
We do. First, vitamins on an empty stomach.
Terrible idea.
Bad, right?
Awful. Which I didn't eat my vitamins on like a empty stomach, but yeah. Normally I make sure I take them like after I eat.
Yeah.
But it was like, have a few bites, swallow a few vitamins, because I'm taking like 30 vitamins in the morning.
Yeah.
I mean, not 30, but it feels like
you're
like
taking
it.
A lot.
Like,
yeah.
Three handfuls, you know? I have to take three swallows of vitamins.
So my goal was, you know, be better at trying to get, because I typically get my vitamins in every day for the most part. Yep. I might miss a day here and there. But my goal was, all right, first thing in the morning, I'm going to eat my vitamins. And so I did that Saturday because I was like, man, okay, I'm going to get on this. You know, I get up. Typically my coffee, you know, I like black coffee. A little bit of, right now I'm on a kick, a little a tablespoon of coconut oil and then like a splash of maple syrup. And it's delicious. So I had my coffee. I had practice at 10. So I went and slugged down all my vitamins. So I was like, all right, you know, time to go practice, get on my bike. I'm like, damn, I don't feel good. And my stomach wasn't good. And I made it all the way to practice. You know, I was like, it's probably the vitamins, you know. And I got to practice. And then I walked in. I was like, fuck, I really don't feel good. And I tried laying down, you know, hoping maybe the feeling would subside, but it didn't. Went and puked my guts out.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, it made me sick.
Taking nauseous. Vitamins on an empty stomach, especially zinc
yeah,
is what tears me up. It feels like I'm car sick.
Same.
It's like being car sick.
Yes.
It's like this uncontrollable like waves of nausea.
Yes. Okay.
So, yeah. No, I don't feel that bad because I did eat.
Yeah. Yeah. You had a little bit of food.
Yeah. I had
right?
a little bit of food, but I just tried to get my vitamins in as fast as I could to continue with my day. But
I don't think I got to look. I don't think my regimen include zinc. I don't think there's zinc in mine, but whatever it was, I did not feel good.
Yeah.
So so anyways, vitamins anyway. Empty stomach.
Just don't
no
do
good.
It.
I mean, and you're kind of roaming around every day with an empty stomach.
Relatively, I know.
Yeah,
compared to how much I normally eat. I know. I'm sure the viewers can see that my face is slowly looking thinner and thinner because I definitely lose weight in my face.
Yes.
So it's now it's like getting around that time where everybody's starting to see the weight. It's like, I feel like when you're on this like weight loss journey, I mean, anybody, it's like first you see it, then your family sees it, then the world sees it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I saw it obviously when I first started, you notice it and then you start noticing. And then now it's like, oh yeah, my face is looking a little smaller.
Oh, last night when I was looking at you, I could I was like really starting to be able to tell, like, could see, and you just get so cute.
Thank you.
You get tiny.
I think that's why they call it like the Ozempic face, like when like all the stars are doing like Ozempic, because when you lose drastic amount, I mean, I think theirs is like, and this is no judgment to anybody who does whatever you do, but because you lose so much weight so fast, it causes like your skin to sag, I guess.
Yeah,
anyways.
Gotcha.
And the only comparison I'm trying to make is that, yeah, you lose a lot of weight in your face and it changes your face.
Yeah, for sure.
Dramatically.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's funny because, you know, dating a
superstar.
Yes. And a professional athlete who has to lose weight and cut weight and stuff, like your body, right? Oh. We kind of have like, we almost have like two different wardrobes. One for when we're starting to get down to weight, and then
I almost need three wardrobes. Yeah. Almost. Like because I have my fat clothes, like happy page, fat and happy. And then I have like the in between where it's like my fat clothes are too big, but my skinny clothes are too small.
Yeah.
So then it's like the in between, but now I'm in the skinny clothes now.
Yeah.
Which is yay.
The in between is like, fuck, I guess I'm being such a piece of shit. Like,
where it's like, I got to figure this shit out, the in between. So, yeah, I almost need 3 wardrobes, but I definitely have 2.
Yes.
Like, yeah. No question, because yeah. When I get down to weight, I am basically a different human.
Yeah, I think all of us. Yeah, definitely. I mean, Yeah, definitely. Especially when I was cutting down to 170.
For sure.
Like, damn. But now, you know,
yeah.
It's not as bad. So, yeah. So we got a good little...
We got a good little episode planned. Yeah. So, you know, talking on the topic of, like, fighting and preparing for battle, our day-to-day schedule is pretty much every minute of every minute of my day is planned.
Yeah.
For the most part. But there is those... periods of the day that are dedicated to recovery.
Yeah.
And in those moments, you find you have a lot of time to just think. Like,
yes.
I'm not distracted with social media. I'm not distracted with something on TV. I'm just trying to recover. And, you know, you're thinking about your fight coming up. You just kind of have, like, a lot of time to, like, process. And you get these deep thoughts. Because, like, really, it feels like we're preparing for war.
Yeah.
Inevitably, we're preparing for battle. It gets you just... I feel like it makes me more analytical. I start thinking about things more. What's the meaning of life? Like...
Oh. Oh.
So,
oh.
What?
Yes.
Yes, I do, huh?
Yes. Oh, boy. Yeah, we have... yeah, there's been...
Was my childhood normal?
Yeah, we've had... Especially... It's changed, and what I know, and hopefully I'm not like airing out too much of your laundry or something.
That's
but
what this is for.
Yes, definitely. You have in the last week have become increasingly emotional, but I know part of it is the weight cut part, losing weight and stuff.
Anytime
it like gets
you
to your head, right?
Oh, it gets to your head. Just calorie deprivation. Yeah. It makes you, calorie deprivation, it fucks with your head. I mean, it's less calories in your brain. It's less calories for your body to operate on. So it definitely, I think it makes you more emotional. And then I'm a woman preparing to go to a fight.
Yes.
So there's that as well. I'm not shy enough to say that, women are more emotional than men.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially preparing for battle.
Yeah.
And I think it takes a specific type of person, one, to be a professional fighter, mm-hmm. and to be in this career and choose to do it every day. So, we're all just head cases.
Yeah, well, and there's, you know, two, you start, like, cutting out carbs and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And it actually does, like, I would like, hopefully I'm saying the right thing, but it makes you less intelligent and a little more stupid, like you know your brain's not functioning the way that it should
I don't feel that way yet. I don't feel that yet at all. I truly just think I'm not distracted. I'm not hanging out with my friends. I'm not, you know, and of course dieting affects your body chemistry, your body composition. The times that I truly feel like my body is affected outside of just, you know, I don't have a lot going on other than fighting and training.
Yeah.
When I actually feel like my body is being affected is when I cut out sodium.
Okay.
When I get sodium deficient towards the last 24 hours, that's where I feel stupid. Like, I truly feel dumb.
Yeah.
And it just makes you lethargic. It kind of just makes you spacey where you're like, oh, what'd you say?
Yeah. So you've had a lot of time to think. You've been very,
sorry,
very
I have,
emotional in the past.
Have I?
You have, yeah. Well, yeah. But it, you know what? That's what the significant other, especially
exactly.
Knowing, because I've been there and I know the feeling, and I'm about to be there too, right?
Yes,
after
you are.
So.
Yes, you are. And you can't tell me that you're different because.
No, I know I'm not.
The two times I remember in our marriage, there's been twice that you. Like, of course, we've had arguments or there's times where I think you're being, you know, unreasonable, whatever. But the two times you snapped at me, it was like a dick move. Both of them, you were cutting weight.
Yes.
So it's like, I can't be mad at you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I would never be mad at you. But it was like, oh, shit. He just snapped at me.
Yeah. What was one? It was the scale. Something about the scale.
You were cutting to 170. It was weigh-in day. I want to say you were within an hour of weighing in.
Yeah.
So this was like the deepest parts of hell, yes, of the weight cut.
Yes.
And I'm trying to get you to get on the scale, but you wanted to get out of the bathroom because you were about to pass out.
Yeah.
Or you felt as if you
just didn't feel good.
You just felt like you needed to lay down. Uh-huh. And you get to those moments where like you just need a second, because it's like everyone's like, work out, get on the scale, get in the bathtub, yeah, get out of the bathtub. And you're just like, just give me a fucking second to lay down.
Yeah.
So I'm like trying to get you to get on the scale. And so then you just like scream at me to move.
Yeah,
and
it's like, move.
Move. And then you go and lay down on the bed. And I was like, oh.
Okay.
Alrighty then.
And that was fairly early on in our relationship.
That was very, very early in our relationship.
Yeah.
Which luckily, because I'm a professional fighter, I knew not to.
Yeah, you knew what was up.
I was like, all right, he needs to lay down.
Yeah.
Anyways, you made weight. Yeah. It all worked out. You fucked the guy up.
Yes, I can be an emotional.
Yes, arguably though, that fight camp, the thing that stands out the most to me is how shitty your haircut was.
Oh gosh, yeah, oh my gosh, there was.
You remember
one.
That haircut?
Yes. So yeah, I've had a couple. My I can't remember. I think it was my pro debut. Mm-hmm. I just had like this shit, and it was the first time making 170. First time I've been that low since like my senior year of high school.
Yeah.
And I had like a shaved head, and I was thinking I wanted to grow my facial hair out too, and I just looked a certain way.
It was a very specific look. Yeah.
And then this other one, that haircut was so bad.
I'm going to put the picture in the Dropbox because I want people to weigh in on what they think.
Yeah, that was
that
was a crazy haircut. I don't know what I was going for.
The picture I have of you too, you're like smiling because it's after the fight and you're drunk, so you have like the like kind of like glazed over eyes, but you're smiling and you have this massive black eye and stitches.
Yeah. Yeah,
still the haircut is just not good.
The haircut. Yeah.
Okay. Let's get back on track.
Okay. Yeah. On track.
Because
you have something planned.
I do. Yes. So I have been obviously preparing to go to war. I'm about 2 weeks out. Super excited for the fight. And I've just had time to just like, not all negative emotions.
No, positive, for sure.
Positive ones too. Just to be like, you know, there has been so many people, and it's just, I have this like sense of gratitude, especially in, like I get another fight. I'm really excited about this one. I know that I've trained harder than ever. I'm more prepared than ever. So I'm just excited because I know what I'm about to go do.
Yep.
So I just have this like wave of gratitude, you know? Mm-hmm. And I have like a thank you podcast.
Okay.
So I have some stories, and this came because I was listening to a podcast of a college professor.
Yeah.
And he had talked about how in the position of teachers and coaches, you don't know how much what you say affects people's lives.
Yeah.
Even at a very young age. And so this is going to start with a negative story, but it's going to turn positive.
Yeah.
So
can I say one thing right before you go? Mm-hmm. You know what I just realized that I think is really funny?
What?
So you're preparing for this fight, blah, blah, blah. You have been obsessed with like murder mystery and stuff like that right now, which it just came to me. I was like, okay, yeah, she's been like binging all these fucking crime murders.
I am no one plans a murder out loud.
Yes,
I am going to murder.
Oh my gosh, yeah, you've been watching some violent shit. Some stuff that I'm like, and I grew up like watching, or I hate to say, I grew up watching some crazy shit. Like, what was it? It was one of the terrible, terrible sites. I think it was like Faces of Death.
Ew.
Something. It was horrible.
Let's not bring up like
but
dark
no, I
web.
Know. But I like, you know, my buddies be like, oh, check this shit out. You
that
know,
that trended when I was in school as
anyways,
well.
Some of the shit you're watching, I'm like, babe, I can't watch this.
Okay. Sorry. This is another detour.
Yeah.
Okay. So obviously my school, I'm from Oregon. You're from Alaska. Also saw all that disgusting,
those terrible,
terrible videos. Yes. We don't need to talk about. But how crazy is it in the era that we grew up in, mm-hmm, without social media, mm-hmm, without really cell phones? Like, I kind of got a cell phone where it was like a flip phone, like a Razor, or like one of those really thick ones.
Yeah.
It was a prepaid one, so you could text, but I only had so many minutes.
Yeah.
Anyways, so without the era of social media or phones, how all the schools in the world were able to spread these rumors that like Marilyn Manson had his ribs removed to be able to.
I don't know that that was a rumor.
Okay, well.
That he had his lower rib removed so he could S his own D.
Yes, but like how these rumors got spread from school to school across the entire country. We were all watching the same videos.
Mr. Hands.
Yes, I remember.
Mr. Hands.
Yes, okay. I do. Two girls, one.
Yes. Yes. There was that. What else? There was the other one that just scarred me that I can still remember. Oh, and I think this is.
What about the unicorn one?
I don't know if I know
Charlie. Charlie, it's a unicorn, Charlie.
Yeah, I don't know if I know that.
Did you ever watch that?
No. Okay. But what I was going to say, and I actually think this was a fetish, but. One of my buddies showed me
one of your fetishes.
No, not one of mine. I think it was like I don't know. Anyways,
okay.
It was I don't even know if I can say this or but it was a
use acronyms.
Yeah, it was a Asian descent lady, and she had a
octopus
yep. inside of her, and she birthed it out, and yeah. So, anyways, this okay. So
is so far away from. What I planned what for planned. Today. I this know, is supposed sorry, to be a very, very to, wholesome episode.
It all just occurred to me. You're watching these crazy murder crime shows.
Yes.
And you're preparing for a violent fight. And so it all connects. That's why you're... So anyways, okay. The gratitude.
Yes. Can we change the subject?
Yeah, yeah. Everybody, no more. I'm not going to interrupt. Everybody
just erase what just happened yes. the last few minutes. And yeah. we're starting over.
Okay.
This is the episode of... This is our thank you episode.
Gratitude. Okay.
Okay, wait. One negative story. So yeah. I had this art teacher in middle school.
Yep.
And I won't say her name. But for whatever reason, I do feel like teachers just have it out for certain kids. Like yeah. I was a 4.0 student. I never missed a day. Actually, I graduated with like a 4.6. I was an overachiever, and I graduated with a advanced diploma.
Uh-huh.
Anyways. So, very studious.
Yeah.
So, I had this teacher and, you know, it's art class, you know? So, we're learning how to draw faces. At some point, she comes over and she was like, sweetheart, like, you need to just stop trying. Just sit there because you're garbage at this and you're never going to be an artist.
Oh, geez.
A teacher told me that in middle school. I was in sixth grade.
Yeah.
Do you know how old you are in sixth grade? Like 12.
Yeah.
Anyways, so... Or younger. Anyways, so she tells me, like, I'm not an artist. So then, of course, I'm just bawling my eyes out because I'm failing at something. And yeah. I am not, like, I can't take failure, especially at this age.
Yeah.
So I am just bawling my eyes out. And I, like, could not believe that she would say that I was terrible. And she told me to just stop trying. So, and then I told my mom. And she, like, really couldn't believe me. So I had to miss one day of school. And I got all my work that I had to be done. I did all my homework. My mom took it to the middle school and put it with the secretary, turned it in a day early to make sure everything was good to go. Anyways, I get my paper back and she gave me an F because it wasn't turned in time.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, no, it was turned in. My mom came in and turned it in. She was like, no, she didn't because it never showed up. So then my mom comes into the school and, my mom looks extremely young for her age.
Yes, she
especially
does.
Especially then.
She was on the podcast. Yeah.
Yes. She looks extremely young for her age, especially back when I was in middle school. So she walks in and my mom wears athletic clothes. Mm-hmm. So already she doesn't like wear high heels or like mom clothes. Yeah. She wears just athletic. She was a dance teacher.
Yeah.
Walks in.
She looks like Angela from The Office.
No. No.
She kind of does.
Well, kind of, but that just athletic,
occurred to me. Yeah.
But athletic. So yeah. Yeah. She walks in and the teacher looks up from her desk at me and my mom and goes, what do you want? And she's like, what do you want?
Yeah.
And my mom was like, excuse me? And she's, yeah, what do you want? Why are you in my classroom? And then she's like, well, I'm here to talk about my daughter's grade because I came in and da da da. And then the teacher was like, oh shit, I just got caught like being a bitch to a student. Anyways, all worked out. With the homework, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I say this because from that moment, that teacher told me I would never be an artist.
Yeah.
Told me I was terrible at art. Just don't stop trying. So I believed my entire life from that moment, I was terrible at art.
Yeah.
I was terrible at drawing. So I just never drew, even though it was something that I actually really loved to do.
Uh-huh.
And then later in life, I like kind of started drawing again.
Yeah, you did.
I did.
We got some of your paintings in the garage. We got some of
my paintings in the garage.
We'll put these on too because they're beautiful.
They are. Thank you. So that being said, I move it to a positive.
Yeah.
So I had Ken Shamrock.
Yeah.
Walk into his gym. I had no desire or aspirations to be a professional fighter. My dad wanted me to take a class with him, and I was willing to try something new.
Yeah.
Walk in, take the class. It was fun. I ended up coming for like, you know, a week. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's Ken fucking Shamrock. So he watches me spar one day. He comes up and he's like, hey, I just want to let you know, like, you have something special in you.
Yeah.
Do not give up.
Like, yeah.
Do not quit because you can go really far in this.
Yeah.
And it's going to make me cry. So in that moment.
Told you guys she's emotional right now.
That's emotional.
Yeah, I know.
So Ken, you know, he had no reason to tell this like 15-year-old girl, like, who he doesn't know me.
Yeah.
For him to just say like, hey, don't give up. And I was like, okay, I won't. And yeah. I believed him and bam, motherfucker, here we are.
So Ken Shamrock
changed the course of my life when I was 15 years old.
That's pretty cool. There's not many people who I think we've talked about before, but you still talk to Ken everyone, I mean, few and far
once
between
in a blue
but
moon,
you still
but yeah,
yeah uh-huh. He still reaches out and stuff. So
yeah, an incredible person. And
yeah,
he might not even know the impact just that one day in the gym, him telling me, hey, it took 10 seconds for him to say, don't quit because you're special. Like,
yeah.
you can go really far.
Damn.
And then it took one thing and I will never, ever, ever forget. I remember standing next to the boxing ring. I remember what I was wearing. I remember, like, every single piece.
Yeah.
And that's what this professor in this podcast was speaking on about the position of coaches and teachers, how you don't really understand. And I was like, wow, that's absolutely true, because I still question if I can draw and if I'm good at art because of that one art teacher. But that moment from Ken, another, you know, coach or teacher in my life telling me that I could go far was, you know, a turning point in my life.
Damn.
So thank you, Ken Shamrock.
Yeah.
That was my first thank you on the list.
I love that. So just another quick little detour.
Yeah.
My art experience was a lot different than yours. So I needed an elective in college, and all my buddies were like, dude,
just take art.
Take art. You get to draw a naked girl at the end and stuff. So I'm like, okay, yeah. So
awesome.
I'm very, very unathletic. Like, I don't know.
No, you are. You drew this flower on my arm, and
I can draw some weird shit, but I can't really draw.
That's a beautiful flower.
I know, like, weird, like, you know. Yeah. But anyways, I wish, because I sent it to my mom. But so, sure as shit.
Naked lady.
Sure as shit. Last day of art for the final, they bring this model in, this lady. And I say model.
Hot?
I say model loosely. But no,
hot?
I mean, you know, she was.
She was so, hot.
I don't know about that. So she drops her robe.
It wasn't your girlfriend, right?
No.
Okay,
no, I mean, this lady's in her mid-50s probably.
Okay, all right.
So she drops a robe and
you like older women,
and she's naked, and she gets up there and she holds a pose, and she's there for I think it must have been like 2 hours, and which is impressive in itself. But the whole premise of the class was just to make progress, because, you know, it was like art one or something,
right?
And
that's what art should be.
Yeah. And anyways, I still might have the portrait, but it is so bad and I want it so bad. I sent it somewhere. I ended up getting a really good grade in the class, but
anyways, I think you're a great artist.
Yeah.
So one day the flower on my arm, I was at the tattoo shop and I texted Austin and I was like, hey, I need you to hand draw a flower for me. And I didn't tell him what it was for, and I was just like, hey, can you just draw a flower on a piece? Or maybe I wasn't at the tattoo shop yet.
No, yeah, I think it was like
we were at home, and I was like, hey, can you just draw a flower for me?
Yeah.
So you drew this beautiful flower picture, and I have it. I'm going to add that to show.
I had no
Austin
idea what
flower.
Yeah, what you needed.
And so you did. And then I went and got it tattooed on my arm.
Okay, so I'll give you a quick your thank gratitude. You,
because I have
quick thank you.
I have like 10 on here. Yeah. I know we can't get to all of them.
No, I think first and foremost, my biggest thank you, of course, both my parents, but my dad was very, very involved, and I was lucky enough that, you know, my dad was one of those dads who he was at every single event. He took me to every practice, like did everything like in his will and possibility to, you know, help me get to where I wanted to be, you know, at that age. And, you know, didn't really matter about money, even though, you know, he wasn't making a ton, it was still that. So first and foremost, my dad. Mm-hmm. But second, a gentleman by the name of John Lindemann, and I've talked about him before. Little bit of his background. He was a wrestler from, it was Minnesota State Mankato, and he was actually an Olympic alternate. Mm-hmm. And he, I knew John from a really young age, like as a young boy, and he really became like integrated into my wrestling when I got into like junior high and in high school, and even into his 60s, like 67 years old, he was still like my main training partner. I can
remember
my junior year of high school, you know, so what, I was a 16 year old or something. Mm-hmm. And you know, and this guy, like I couldn't take him down until like my junior year, and he was 67, and
that's incredible.
Yeah, so but more, I think more than the wrestling aspect of like the impact that he had on my life was just the person that he is, you know, still today. And, you know, he's much older today and all that. And we actually saw him in Alaska not too long ago. But I think what stands out to me is like his faith in the person that he is. So he also had a son, Rennie Lindemann, who was a high school state champion, really good wrestler, like incredible wrestler. And you know, John and his family are very religious. He's a God-fearing man, and he would run a vacation Bible school every summer. Mm-hmm. And you know, I would go to it, and it always looked forward to it every summer. But what stands out to me with John is his no matter what, I mean, he has had some hard things happen in life, but it's never shaken, never you know, took away from his faith and all that.
Tested his faith.
Yeah, so his son Rennie was a stud wrestler. His name's on right next to mine, actually, at the high school, a state champion, and I believe it was his senior year. He was riding a snow machine in an Ilchik, and it was a snow machine or a three wheeler, and I could butcher the story a little bit, but the main point of it was he was hit by a drunk driver and passed away, you know. And still, you know, you question all these things in life, like, you know, why I'm such a faithful man, and I, you know, spread the word, you know, all this stuff. And it never shook his faith, and even then past that, and his son Rennie was my stepdad Gary Michaels' age, and even beyond that, you know, this was 10 years ago at the Alaska or at the Peninsula State Fair. His grandson, 8-year-old boy, did 4-H, and they were getting ready to do the rodeo that year or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the boy was taught never to tie a rope to himself in the cow. Well, for whatever reason he did, and the cow got scared and drug him around the arena, and he passed away, you know, at 8 years old, but still, you know, still remained rock solid. And yeah, just one of those things where it's like, it's crazy to see, you know, these things happen, and I'm very fortunate to know John and have had him as a mentor growing up, you know, and you know, see like these things that happen, you know, and you still stay strong in your beliefs. Yep. and stuff. So my one that isn't a family member, John Lindemann, yeah. I just really thankful and happy. Yeah. I don't know, it can make me cry. Yeah, it gets me a little
emotional too. All right, my next one.
Okay.
Actually, I have two directions I can go. I'll do the easy one first because the next one's going to make me cry. Okay. So when I was, 18 years old, I fought in Texas.
Yeah.
And it was an MMA fight. I went out there with just one teammate, one person only. And I'm in the back and we realized that like, and this was the coolest experience because I actually fought on, they put the cage on a baseball diamond.
Oh, shoot.
So it was, it was outside on a baseball field. And I went out there and I realized like my one corner didn't have anybody to hold, help me hold my banner. I didn't have anybody to hold the bucket, give me water, just so, for whatever reason, just one team in the back noticed I was alone and I was a nobody. Like, I was a nobody at this point.
Yep, yep.
But, you know, this team saw that I was struggling to, like, one, warm, get a warm-up in, hit pads. The person I brought didn't know how to hold pads. So it was like I was just, like, struggling to get things going. And just for whatever reason, they just volunteered. They were like, hey, do you want me to go out there with you?
Yeah.
And this actually happened twice.
Oh, damn.
So, and we were like, yeah, of course, would you? And because I didn't have anybody, any other licensed corners, I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
So they went out there, they helped corner me, give me water in between rounds, hold my banner.
Oh, shoot.
This has happened twice, actually, both in Texas.
Yeah.
And then my pro debut in Corpus Christi, the same thing. The guy was like, hey, do you want me to go out there and corner you?
Yeah.
And it was my pro debut again. I am fighting the hometown hero.
Yeah.
There is no reason this guy should volunteer to like help me.
Yeah.
And did, came out, cornered me, held my bucket, gave me water in between rounds, and both wins and both in Texas. So
damn.
Thank you to those guys who just like stepped up for no reason to,
yeah.
Because like how, I mean, obviously their fighters had already fought, but like they should just go, you know, be with their family. Like yes, the camp's over. Sure. You did everything you needed to do, but they chose to stay and corner me. And yeah, really cool. I'll never forget that.
Yeah. Damn. That's cool.
You want me to go again?
No, I could go. My next one is my high school wrestling coach who, my late coach, Kevin Zimmerman, who unfortunately passed away. But you know, less of a different relationship with Kevin, because he was that guy who taught me, you know, there's time to have fun and then there's time to like really put in work. Mm-hmm. and he was always very what's the word I want to say, kind of philosophical in his approach, and but you know, like a really fun guy. And mm-hmm. anyone, especially you know my friends and family who listen, you know Kevin and all that from back in the day, and I was thankful that he actually was able to, when I fought in Washington, mm-hmm. I won that belt, he was able to be there, and unfortunately he had passed away like the week after that, you know. And but my high school coach taught me hard work. I actually worked for him growing up mm-hmm. too, for his halibut charter, butt chaser, and just a good guy, you know, always looked after me and had my back. And, you know, a lot of times it was, we'd go on wrestling trips and it was me, him and my dad, and that mm-hmm. was it. And we'd go, you know, go to these far off places in Alaska and stuff, but always grateful and thankful for the things he taught me. And
that's
and,
awesome.
Good dude, and definitely miss him.
Yeah. I'm happy I got to meet him too.
Yeah.
That was the first fight I ever went to with you.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Uh-huh. The first
fight where I went to and we were dating.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So you got to meet him that mm-hmm. night, and yeah. And then you know, he unfortunately had diabetes and you know, so, but good dude. Mm-hmm. Love him, miss him.
Yeah. Okay, my next one is the Massenarys.
Oh, cool.
Which you know them.
Yes.
So the Massenarys, they are my family friends that I met when I was 10 years old. I went to LA and I wanted to be a child star. I wanted to be on Disney. And me and Colby, she ended up being my maid of honor at our wedding. We met dancing, and I was like, you know, she, like, just looking at her, because she was so good. But I was like, so, and then our moms ended up watching, because they were watching us, and through the, you could come to the dance studio and you could watch us through a window, and the mom started talking, and now my mom and her mom have been lifelong best friends as well.
Yeah.
So we ended up staying at the same hotel.
Yeah.
And became, you know, friends at 10 years old.
Yeah.
Never lost touch. So all of a sudden, I'm 18 years old. I take a pro fight, win. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm a pro fighter now.
Yeah.
Ken Shamrock had shut down his gym called the Lion's Den that was in Reno at the time. So I was like, all right, I got to figure out what's next. I did have an academic scholarship to continue to go to college, but my parents were like, you know what? This is the one opportunity in your life to chase a dream.
Yeah.
Like, you should do it. So they were very adamant that I chase this dream.
Yep.
Las Vegas was known as the MMA capital of the world.
Yeah.
So I was like, I need to go to Vegas. Colby and the Massenarians happen to live in Vegas.
Yeah.
We call them up with no question. They moved me into their house until I could find a place. I lived there for a while.
Yeah.
They got me a job at their church. So I was I was like a lunch lady.
Yeah.
And I worked in the coffee shop at their church. So it was like a church in a charter school. It's called Cornerstone Christian Academy. If you're in Vegas and you need a Christian academy or church to go to, I highly recommend. So they gave me a job. They put me up their house. They paid for absolutely everything. They helped me with, I mean, so much in my life.
Yeah.
And every single time I go to Vegas, since I, you know, moved on, like, I would have events, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, not a, I am a girly girl, but I'm not. Like,
yeah, for sure.
I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Yeah. So every time I would show up, Colby would show up with her whole wardrobe of her closet, and she would help me get dressed. Her and her mom would do my hair and makeup.
Yeah.
They would get me up ready. Like, every event I had in Vegas, they dressed me. They helped do my hair and makeup for.
Yeah.
Like, they have just supported my career for so long.
Yeah.
And every time I go to Vegas, they help me out. Again, put me up forever. Then you propose.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, because as much as like I just wanted to elope, I just wanted to marry you. I wasn't one of those brides that like had this whole thing of planned. I was just overwhelmed.
Yeah,
you
know. Sure.
And so they lived in a different state. We lived in Oregon at the time. I call them up. I'm like, hey, I need help. And they took me wedding dress shopping, helped me find my dress. She was my maid of honor.
Yeah.
Her brother was our pastor. And they did all the decorations. They showed up early. They flew in from Vegas. They decorated the whole thing. They literally took care of our entire wedding.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
everything they've done in our lives, I mean, that just scratches the surface of like how impactful they've been in our lives. But
yeah.
They are a truly incredible family. So
yeah, this is hard because there are so many people that I want to, like, I could keep going on, I'll keep it short. And I'm just going to do one more kind of group together. But
yep.
My college wrestling coach, Mike Ritchie, great dude, was a guy that, you know, going from small town Alaska to Southern Oregon, you know, he took a chance on me and just a really, really good guy. And I learned a lot from him. But, and then the assistant coach, Joel Gibson, who really like took me under his wing and just an incredible guy, and he's actually the head coach now at my old school, and a guy I really care about. But then moving on from there, Brandon Miller and Fabiano Scherner.
Oh my gosh, yeah, they're on my list too.
Yeah, and not enough time to talk about
Fabiano and Brandon, and you know, yeah. I mean, short story about like Brandon's character. When we were going through all of our struggles with our contractor,
yeah,
he flew here to make sure we were okay, because he's also in the construction world.
Yep.
And he interviewed our next contractor, reviewed all the contracts, made sure everything, like, this was all out of, he flew here on his own accord. He just showed up to help us.
Yep.
And like, that's beyond impacting our careers, but showed up to help us in like one of the hardest times of our lives.
Yeah. And I think too, like, you know, Fabiano, coach, professor Fabiano Scherner in Portland, you know, we got to a point where we needed to move on in our career, mm-hmm. and Portland wasn't the place for us then, and all that. And, you know, a lot of times you know, people move gyms or they move and it kills a relationship, yep. and stuff. And both Brandon and Fabiano have both just supported us the whole time.
Like, and crazy. Been, and,
yeah.
And that's the point I wanted to talk about with, like, Brandon and Fabiano is it's true. A lot of times, you know, as coaches and teachers, I understand you get attached and, you know, I've moved gyms and I've felt the negative repercussions from yeah. it. And I think as a coach, they go out of their way to say, like, hey, you need more.
Yeah, for sure.
You need more than we're able to provide.
Yeah.
And they truly want nothing than to see us succeed.
Yeah.
And whether we came to Florida for coaching or training or teammates or this or that, I came for all kinds of other stuff. But they just have never, ever, ever wavered on their support. And
yeah.
like their true just like desire to see us be successful,
yeah.
which is really cool. So we'll have lifelong friends in Brandon and Fabiano.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do quick ones.
Okay.
Sorry, this is just a thank you podcast.
Yeah.
I'm so emotional. Okay. Yeah. My cousin Danielle.
Yep.
Who, you know, she just has always been like, when I look back in my life, all the bad shit that I went through, everything in high school, everything in my career, you know, she drove when I fought in Texas. She had lived in Texas.
Yeah.
Obviously, Texas is huge. She drove 21 hours to watch me fight.
Oh, damn.
She drove 21 hours to show yeah. up and be there for me. Drove through the night. And then after my fight, drove me an hour and a half back to my hotel before she took the drive all the way home.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, that just shows her dedication and her love for me. So,
yeah.
She's an incredible cousin, and I love her forever.
Yeah.
And then a few... just shout outs, obviously my parents. And then MMA Inc. was like my first managers that I had.
Yeah.
They were the first ones who I felt like truly cared about me.
Yeah.
Obviously I moved on and I felt like I needed to continue on in a different direction. But they supported me so much growing up and the start of my MMA career when I was first in the UFC. I just got so close to them. Like, they really became like father figures,
uh-huh.
or uncles, I guess, if you know.
Yeah.
But they were so supportive. Like, I remember one time I was brought to Vegas. No. So I had signed with the UFC.
Yeah.
And then I signed with them. And then they were like, okay, well, have you ever been to a UFC fight? And I was yeah. like, no.
Oh, shit.
And they're like, well, you're about to fight in the UFC. You need to go to a fight
yeah.
to understand what it's like. They flew me to Vegas. Paid for the whole thing.
Yeah.
It got up to where I needed to, they paid for my hotel room, but paid for my hotel room and everything. But I go up to put my card, to like check in, and the lady's like, oh, I need a credit card for incidentals. It'll charge you $150. But
yeah.
I didn't have $150.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I couldn't even put the security deposit down.
Yeah.
And so with no hesitation, they're like, oh, no, we got it.
Yeah.
They took care of everything. They paid for absolutely everything that trip. And every trip I went on, they just took care of me and yeah. supported me. So thank you, MMA Inc. Craig, you know Craig.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Craig.
Craig Weiss. Yeah.
Weiss.
Yeah.
My financial advisor.
Good dude. Yeah.
I have a funny story. Okay, this is another funny one. Sorry. I'm just like so in the feelers.
Yeah.
So Craig's my financial advisor, and I've been with him since I was 19.
Yeah.
19 years old. I've been with the same, and he's so cool. So, but the first time I go, my managers, MMA Inc.
Yeah.
set me up with Craig because they were all very good friends. I show up. I had just won my UFC debut.
Yeah.
At a $50,000 check because I got fight of the night.
Yeah.
So I go into Craig's office and, you know, I trusted him. And so we'd go through, we set all the accounts up that I need. He kind of like does my, you know, 1 year, 5 year, 10 year plan with me. It was a long meeting. Ended up giving him the $50,000 check to deposit. And then this is me by myself. I'm
yeah.
20 years old. So I'm leaving his office and I call my parents and I'm like, hey guys, I'm investing. Like, I invested. Yay.
Yeah.
And they're like, what do you mean? And I was like, oh, I went and I signed up with a financial advisor today. And they're like, okay, what's his name? I'm like, I don't remember.
Oh my.
They were like, okay. I was like, no, but I invested my $50,000. I did it. I'm investing. And they're like,
I just handed my money to some guy.
Like, you just handed $50,000 to some guy and you don't even know his fucking name.
Oh, that's funny.
I was like, but no, it's Mike's friend. It's yeah. fine. So me and my parents got into this huge fight because I just gave this check to Craig. Anyways, it all was great.
Fast forward. Whatever, 10 years now and we're still
It's been 11, Craig. 11 years.
11 years.
Still with Craig. Still on track. 10-year goal came sooner than 10 years. Yeah. But we're still good dude. Working really hard.
Yep.
So who else did I have on here? I know my parents. I'm in my ink. Obviously, our managers, Malky and Garrett, that we're with now, they're awesome.
And Abe.
Yep. Incredible. We're with MMA Inc. Or no, used to be with MMA Inc. First round. Yeah. They're awesome. They've obviously changed the trajectory of our careers.
Yeah.
And then I put on here, husband.
Oh. But I was going to end with you, too.
I know. But I had wanted to type something up for you, but then I just couldn't. It was too
emotional.
Too emotional. But obviously, I am extremely thankful for you. Yeah. I know how hard it is to be married to me.
No, it's not that hard. I know how hard it is to be married to me.
But yeah, I appreciate you putting up with all my shit and the sacrifice and just the day-to-day of one, just everything.
Yeah, but I think, you know, like we've talked about, we understand what each other's going through, and it really isn't as hard as what you think. And you know, obviously I'm very thankful for the life that we have and that I have and all this. So, you know,
we have a good life.
Yeah. But to end this podcast on a funnier note, we need to go watch the Tom Brady roast.
Yes, we do.
And would you ever want to be roasted?
Absolutely.
Although you get roasted. you kind of get roasted every day.
It
sounds bad
when you say it, but that's exactly what I was going to say. I get fucking roasted.
I mean, you kind of get roasted anyways. But
every day.
But man, I saw, so I haven't watched it yet, but I've seen little clips and I'm sure a lot of the people have
watched it,
but the Julian Edelman tight end joke was insane.
Yeah, please don't roast me.
Yeah.
Please don't.
So we need to go watch that. Maybe tonight. We need to add some humor.
We do.
Take away some of this dark, like, crime shit.
I like it.
What are you watching now? Waco?
Waco.
Okay.
Now I'm watching Waco, which isn't a murder mystery. I'm on episode either 2 or 3. Very interesting.
What was the one you just finished? And not to stir up any like
keep
religious.
Sweet, pray and obey.
That was nuts.
That was fucking nuts. I mean, anybody who watches it, you can't watch that and not think it's fucking nuts.
Yeah, no matter what you believe in, there's
nuts. Yeah, I watched the Texas Killing Fields. That was really good. I watched Don't Pick Up the Phone. Interesting. Fucking nuts.
That's the one, really
murdery.
Okay.
Is
that the one where it's the guy is dating the girl and then dates the other girl?
Nope, that's a different one.
Okay, what's Don't Pick Up the Phone?
Don't Pick Up the Phone is basically this guy who's pretending to be a police officer who actually is and turns out to be a police officer.
Yes, that one was
I can't even
nuts.
Get into it. Guys, just go watch it. It's freaking and twisted. Then the other one where the girl gets murdered, where it's like a love triangle situation.
Yeah.
Super good. The unfortunate thing is every time I end one murder mystery, Netflix just recommends another one.
All right, well, I've got to go send some cards off to PSA.
Wait. Okay, sorry. Okay. You have to send
cards. No, I was going to say, I got to go send some cards off to PSA. Yep. I'm going to watch this Tom Brady roast.
Okay, and then we practice.
And then we got training, so.
I wanted to sign this off with a thank you.
Okay.
To the fans.
Yes.
I would not be anywhere without the support of my fans, some of which have become lifelong friends.
Yes.
Some have supported me along the journey, made t-shirts for me, showed up to fights, helped design my fight posters, sending me fan mail and just support messages. So truly thank you to like all the fans who have stayed with me for the long run.
Yeah, for sure.
For everything. Yeah. And the journey is, I feel like I'm just getting started, which is weird.
And thank you to Juan.
Yeah, thank you, Juan, our podcast. Juan,
Yeah, Juan is a good dude, and we're really thankful to have him in our lives.
We have a really good team to make this all happen and all possible. So thank you, everybody.
All right.
Listen to this episode. Send a comment, because we're going to do a giveaway for the fans.
We're going to do a big giveaway.
We'll announce it next week. But we're going to do a big thing.
We're doing giveaway. One that everyone will like.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Anyways. All right.
All right.
Oh, that was a kick-ass love story with your host, Paige Van Zandt, Austin Vanderford, Dennis Vanderford. Find us on YouTube, OFTV. Deezer, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcasts, every Wednesday at 12 p.m.
Out.